another endearingly shambolic podcast from WeDigPodcasts.com.
Hi, we dig music, and because of this, we've kept the music in our podcast at a low background level because we believe that you should support the artist by buying their records and going to their gigs. If you want to hear the songs in full, we've made Spotify playlists of all available music featured in each episode, which you can find on WeDigPodcasts.com. You can also join in the discussion on Facebook and Twitter by searching at WeDigMusicPcast. Finally, if you dig what you're hearing, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice, write a review if possible, and tell all your friends that you think would enjoy it. Anyway, enough of my yakking. On with the podcast.
Welcome to We Dig Music.
Hello.
I'm Tracy, and with me, as always, are my comrades and co-hosts, Colin.
Hello.
And Ian.
Hello.
We have reached the letter T. And so, this month we are going to be covering ambient post-rock band This Will Destroy You.
Yes.
And, well, I don't know how you describe them.
Prog metal fucking legends. Tool.
Not quite the words I'd have chosen, but yes.
Well, you'd be wrong if you used any other words.
I think the word noodle was going to come in there somewhere.
There's no noodling.
There's very little noodling in Tool.
It's very prog, though.
We'll get into that in a bit.
We'll get into that later.
That needs to be on a T-shirt, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We'll get into that in a bit.
It really does.
And then on the back, nothing, because we quite often don't get into it later on.
Yep.
Usually. So, This Will Destroy You, I believe, was Ian's choice.
It was indeed.
Please tell us something about them.
Okie dokie.
Just one thing.
I like them.
Cool.
This Will Destroy You, unsurprisingly abbreviated to TWDY,
Twiddy.
They're an American post-rock band from San Marcos in Texas, formed in 2004. Typically composing lengthy atmospheric instrumental pieces, featuring layers of effects-laden guitar and heavy usage of dynamics.
That'll be post-rock then.
Their fourth album, Another Language, released in 2014, entered the Billboard Heat Seekers album chart at number 7. Members include current members Jeremy Galindo, Christopher Royal King, Robbie Gonzalez, and Jesse Keys. Previous members Raymond Brown, Andrew Miller, Donovan Jones, and Alex Bohr. I'm unfamiliar with Raymond Brown and Andrew Miller. I think that was early, or possibly
like Young Mountain Tour days.
Yeah, maybe. But I met Dono. He is a good dude.
Cool.
And Alex was the drummer. So there.
Uh-huh. Is this a band you've interviewed then?
Yeah, I interviewed them at... Not Temples. The other one, the one that's up north, Leeds. Damnation.
Damnation Festival.
Yes.
Which they don't really seem as heavy as I would imagine.
Yeah, but I've seen Bosk there. I've seen
Bosk
Yezu.
Can get very heavy.
Yeah, but like they have a post-rocky kind of stage.
Yeah.
So they're very...
Cool.
When did you interview them?
Oh, crikey. That was round about when they were touring This Will Destroy You.
Yeah, the self-titled.
The first time round, not an anniversary for it.
Yeah, 2000. Oh, cool. Yeah, about 2008, I guess, yeah.
Ah, excellent.
Yep. So, there you go.
They're a name that I've heard for years.
Yeah.
And had never investigated until... My first encounter with them was supporting The Cure in Hyde Park this
really?
Year.
Really?
Mm.
Yes.
Not even, because I played the shit out of them.
Yeah, no, either when I was not around or I'd not particularly picked up on it.
Ah.
I've liked everything I've heard. It's really, really, really good stuff.
That self-titled is fucking phenomenal.
It is. But Yeah, so I went to check them out at The Cure in Hyde Park.
Yeah, yeah.
And came away with absolutely nothing from it. Because it was completely fucking ruined by football cunts.
Yeah.
They were on stage at the exact same time that England were playing in the... I don't know if it was the final, because I don't give a fuck. It was some kind of high-up World Cup-y type thing last summer.
Yeah.
Right.
Whatever the bit that England did that nobody expects them to do. But
win,
yeah.
Win again.
So there were loads of fucking pricks who were all crowded around that small stage that they were on.
Yeah.
Watching football on their phones, chatting over the...
Cause oh, that's so
really
rude.
Quiet
that's
bits
terrible.
Of the music, and they were completely fucking drowning it out. And then they were all going, yeah, oh, I miss... And it just...
That must have been so really horrible for the band themselves.
I mean, it may well be that closer to the stage, if you're in, like, the first maybe 20 rows, and you were standing up there, then you'd have been fine, but I was only at that stage to check them out for a bit before getting back to the main stage for...
Last time I saw them, it was definitely a... Everyone needed to be quiet for you to really get into it kind of thing. Like, the newer stuff is a little bit more... Like, not... I was going to say flatter, but you know what I mean? There's less
dynamics.
Monstrous crescendos.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And more just beautiful ambience.
Yeah. And it seems...
Yeah, it's gone very ambient.
Yeah, because, like, the... Three-Legged Workhorse has got such a monstrous crescendo to it, and it's fucking enormous.
That whole self-titled album, as you said, is fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
Strangely, though, that self-titled one didn't strike me as much as the others. I knew the name, like Colin, and you have played them on Box of Rock before,
I have.
I'm sure, in your self-indulgent section at the end.
100%. That was what it was called.
Yeah.
It really was called the self-indulgent section. I didn't name it that.
Yeah.
As if picking 2 hours worth of music wasn't self-indulgent enough.
It's like, actually, no, this is really self-indulgent. But but I'd not really listened to them. And they tick a lot of boxes, don't they? I mean, it's ambient, post-rock, drone, electronica.
It's going to be a Tracy Bingo episode, isn't it?
Yeah,
it really is.
100%.
They are devastatingly beautiful.
There we go.
Yep.
I fucking adored... everything I listened to, but I listened to them all out of order. So I mean, I started at the start with Young Mountain, but then I didn't listen to the self-titled album until last, I think, because I jumped straight from Young Mountain, possibly because I got confused on Spotify, but I jumped straight to the third album, Tunnel Blanket.
Isn't that one of your favourites, Tunnel Blanket?
It ended up being my favourite. It ended up being my favourite.
Self-titled is by far my favourite.
Okay,
I dig Tunnel Blanket.
But then I really, really liked the 2018 New Others Part 1 and Part 2.
Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it?
I like the bleepiness.
It seems like there's a bit more electronics on the two most recent.
Yeah.
Which reminded me of the most recent Explosion in the Sky record.
Yeah.
There are so many parallels with Explosions because they're from Texas.
Mm. Yeah.
They're an instrumental post-rock band. And outside of the music, there's so little that I could find to actually say.
True.
Yeah, they keep themselves to themselves, really.
I believe that very early on they did actually have a singer, but decided it just working and decided to just carry on instrumental.
That would be one of those two random names that I mentioned.
They started out sounding like Radiohead with a singer, but they got rid of him fairly soon.
Yeah.
It was before they recorded anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of gigs in or something, I believe.
When I was listening to their stuff for this, I've been listening to them over quite a period, over like the end of April and into May. And so I listened to them in different types of weather.
Yeah.
And the early stuff was really well suited to the cold weather, and the later stuff more suited to the warmer days.
Oh.
And it's like they seem to be a band for all seasons. I really like that.
Yeah, yeah. I get that.
But I know that Colin thinks I spend more time researching the bands I already knew
normally
for this podcast. But for this one, actually, I neglected even listening to The Wedding Present.
No, you didn't. You're posting all the fucking time on Twitter about listening to The Wedding Present.
But it was only that I wasn't posting about listening to This Will Destroy You, because actually I...
Neglecting about listening to the nth degree, maybe.
Yeah.
I actually, toward the end, I put off my Wedding Present research to make sure I could listen to every This Will Destroy You album.
I put off my wedding present research as well. Until this morning.
I basically need to buy their entire back catalogue.
As well, you should.
Yeah.
You should. They were very different the two times. I've seen them three times. So twice on the self-titled, and then once on the newest. I think it was like 2015 last time saw them.
So. Was it mainly sort of the gigs that you saw where most people were there to see them?
Yes, they were
either headliners at festivals or.
Yeah, well, they weren't that high up in... In fact, no, I've seen them four times now. They weren't that high up on the bill in Damnation, but it was in a stage that was very post-rock biased, so people were into it. I saw them supporting And So I Watch You From Afar.
Right, yeah.
So people were into it. We saw them over at... what's that awesome venue in Leicester? On the corner. Not the Charlotte, it's just a pub. I've forgotten the name of it.
The Musician?
No.
Soundhouse?
No. Again, no.
I knew the Charlotte.
I don't know.
Well,
Firebug.
Firebug, yeah. There we go. Saw them there. They were headlining there. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, that'd be the upstairs room in Firebug.
And then I saw them at the old... that venue that shut. That was really good that we played a few times up in Digbeth. It was renamed The Horses? End for a bit.
I can't remember.
No, I can't either. It's not, got a warehouse. Not, oh, the Rainbow.
Rainbow. The Rainbow.
Yeah, so it wasn't at the warehouse. It was in the small. But the last time I saw them, it was a lot more electronic, a lot more on a level.
I would love to see them
Chris
live.
Was playing keyboard more than he was playing guitar.
Yeah.
Although, realistically, when he was playing guitar all the time, he was... Like, his... rig was a laptop into an amp, so you basically could never hear what his guitar was doing.
So there was a lot of manipulation.
Just drowned in effects and stuff like that. It only got a couple of pedals and then just a laptop with probably Ableton or something like that.
Ableton's one of the most sort of rigged up for live use kind of things, isn't it? Ableton Live.
Whereas Jeremy's very obvious what he's doing. He's phenomenal, really, really interesting player, and I think the juxtaposition of the two is really, really good.
Yeah,
because a lot of the times you've got two post rock guitarists who are playing similar things, and you fight for space
just a little bit. A melody and a counter melody kind of thing. Yeah,
kind of like Mogwai,
doing more sort of textural kind of stuff.
That's main difference between them and Explosions is that Explosions is two or even three guitars,
very Fendery, chimey,
playing kind of intermingling melodies. Whereas Jeremy plays a Fender, but it's one with humbuckers.
But whereas with, Tracy just mentioned Mogwai, Barry Burns doing a lot of the keyboard and the vocoder type stuff sounds like what the other guy's doing with the laptop. Yeah.
Some of the stuff on New Others actually made me think of of My Bloody Valentine and the kind of little looped interludes in between songs on Loveless.
Yeah. It's a lot more it's all cinematic, but it's like a different kind of cinematic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was just like, loops that seemed to just stretch to infinity. And really ambient. I mean, there was a track, actually, that I thought was somewhere between sort of post-rock and maybe The Orb.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
They're kind of like a less aggressive 65 Days of Static. With the way that they use the electronics.
Yes, very much so. The electronics always kind of remind me of that.
Yeah, sort of glitchy. Like
the same glitchy.
Very glitchy. I mean, there was the New Promised Land Inc. is just full of glitchy loops.
Yeah.
That really made me think of Loveless, actually.
The main one for me where the electronic bits really stood out was They Move on Tracks of Never Ending Light on the self-titled record.
That's fucking magnificent, that is.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite delicate, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of quite soft and swoony.
Seriously, the amount of people that are going to be fucking calling house on the face of bingo cards today is ridiculous. Might not happen so much in the second half, unless noodling.
They're indescribably beautiful, though, aren't they?
You seem to be describing them.
Well, yeah. I mean, that self-titled one, actually, I guess... It didn't get me as much because it was kind of quite melodic, soft, and quite lullaby-ish.
Yeah. Well, on Tunnel Blanket, which was the record after that, Is that right?
Yeah, in 2011.
They did the field studies EP as well.
Okay. The Tunnel Blanket, I heard a podcast interview with, I think it was with Jeremy, it's a post-rock podcast called Storm Static Sleep. Yeah. Where one of the things that he said in there was they made a sort of conscious decision to try and go away from the trebly, sort of twinkly guitar bits, which is what kind of you'd think of with Explosions particularly.
Yeah.
And aim more towards the low end and write the tunes around the bass parts and that kind of thing.
Maybe that's where I'm thinking the orb comes in, because there's a song on Tunnel Blanket, Killed the Lord, Left for the New World. Had a real summery feel, and that's the one that I thought was somewhere between the orb and post-rock. It was just really hypnotising.
Okay.
But then the track after that, Black Dunes, went straight back to them searing guitars and crashing cymbals, and that made me feel very Mogwai.
The only orb that I really know is like Little Fluffy Clouds, which probably isn't very representative.
It's not representative of that first album at all.
And Satan.
Oh, and Satan. Fucking no, that's Orbital.
Oh, the Orb. Yeah. I always get confused with them too.
Well, they've got very similar names and making relatively similar music.
Yeah.
But the opening track on Tunnel Blanket, Little Smoke, I had almost no words. It just, everything stopped.
You seem to have found some.
It was so sad. It was jaw-droppingly harrowing. I was listening to it walking home from work, and I just had to slow my pace. I just wanted to stop and stare into nothing. It's just like world fuck off music.
Is this what you were listening to when you put something about anxiously listening to post rock on? Twitter
yeah. Yesterday morning.
Stick some Ramones on and cheer up.
I should have. I should never start the day with coffee and emotional post rock.
Always coffee, infrequently emotional post rock. That's my motto.
I found a new technique of getting away with listening to post-rock in the car earlier today.
Yeah?
I had to drive around to my dad's to pick up the microphones to record, so I brought my daughter with me, who normally wants nursery rhymes on in the car because she's three. But we've kind of got this thing at the moment where when it's just me and her in the car, we pretend it's a spaceship, so we put our space helmets on. So I told her it was space music, and she was absolutely fine with it.
Perfect.
Then got back in the car, and she went, can we put space music on? Yes, we can.
Fantastic.
So I think all instrumental post-rock type stuff is going to be space music now, and I can get away with putting that on. Because if it had lyrics in there, she'd notice that it's not about space. Or...
Yeah.
This is clearly about something I'm not interested in.
Do you know, I mean, I always come back to this, my problem with post-rock, the lack of lyrics. And this isn't a problem with the music about lyrics, actually. More, this was about the titles. I've always wondered with post-rock song titles, how do you know that's what it's about? How is it about that when there isn't lyrics to suggest that's what it's about?
Because you know. Because when you write the song, you're like...
But no one else knows, so it leaves it open to your own interpretation and like emotional translation.
I think this is why a lot of post-rock songs tend to be either very short and nondescript or very long.
Well, it's the very long descriptive ones that right. Let's see if you recognise any of these.
It depends on the band, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I've got some examples.
Oh,
three different bands. Oh, this is one of my games today. So there's three. One of them you won't know, so it's not much of a game.
Come on,
but
this is a shit game.
So, post-rock, lyricless song. Nobody knows what do the clouds think when they see themselves in the sea.
Oh, well, I know that. I introduced you to that
you
band.
You certainly did.
It's Powder, Go Away.
I know. Right. Another one
is that
with
the title, or is that what it...
That's the band.
Powder, Go Away is the band. Right, yeah.
And then there's a couple from a band. I won't get you.
Just read them.
Yeah, just get on with it.
Our World Is Their Heaven.
Ooh.
You won't know it. You don't know the band.
Then there's no point.
Yeah.
Which is what I was about to say.
What was the band?
That's from Avrocar. And I thought a lot of...
But only
This Will Destroy
them.
You sounded like Avrocar. In fact, there's one of their songs which sounds... The introduction sounds so like an Avrocar song from 2008 called Soft Lightning. Anyway...
There's one on the new album, on one of the two new albums. I think it's on the first one, part one, that I think... that they have probably subconsciously nicked from a Lanterns on the Lake song, because they're likely to have heard potentially gig with him, because they're a similar
song. Which song was that?
That was a fucking terrible quiz.
Oh, no, but there was one more.
Go on, then.
It's dark, all I can do is surrender.
Leave that one to Colin, then.
Yeah. Who could that be? I think it might be Structures. That's Ian's band.
Yep.
And so,
also, there's lyrics in that one.
Yeah. So, what are you talking about?
Okay.
You just look. You don't listen to it often.
We were surrounded by steel then.
Yeah.
Also, there Structures.
Mm-hmm. But
actually, stolen from a quote by Luke Wilkins, DJ on Kerrang, when he was talking about going and interviewing Bring Me the Horizon, because he was in Sheffield.
Right.
So he literally was surrounded by steel. And I was like, that's a fucking good aren't that. And I wrote it down.
So, cool. And is that just how lyricless songs get their names? It's just a cool phrase you heard.
This is what I was trying to say before. It depends on the band.
Mm.
Mogwai, quite often it will be a comment from a stupid conversation that they've had.
Like, the sun smells too loud.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I, being pretentious me, at that point in time in the album of when that song comes up, you're meant to be in space.
Yeah.
So you are surrounded by steel.
Because it's a concept album.
Yeah.
So if...
Well, yes, it was very much a concept album.
So that is just floating in space, that song.
So Red Sparrows, their song titles aren't an abstract thing, because when you read the song titles for the whole album, it's a story. It's an entire... the song titles are like a 3 lines long.
Yeah.
And...
Spotify does not like showing you them all.
No, Glissando were similar as well, weren't they?
Yeah,
But then not all of their stuff was that soft either. I mean, because that one song that I thought sounded very Avrocart was actually from New Others Part 1, Sinkage.
Yeah.
And toward the end of it, it goes really manic, almost overwhelming.
Sweet
Creatures. Yeah.
It gets really, really clattery, quite mathy.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided
you've recently learnt about math rock.
Yeah,
haven't you?
And I've decided this is now post kraut rock. It's a new genre.
Post kraut.
Well, kraut rock is absolute ancestor of post rock.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you could not have a lot of post rock bands without the electronic bits from Kraftwerk.
Mm.
You know, Can, Amon Dull 2.
Yeah,
people like that, they're massive influences. Whether they, you know, they might be sort of 3 levels down in the influences, but they're definitely,
yeah, as far as Structure's concerned, they're at least 2 levels down, because no thanks.
You might like Archangel Thunderbird by Amon Dull 2, because it's got a fucking awesome groove.
Okay, I may have a go.
Yeah.
Maybe Archangel, by the way.
Yeah. Another one I've only ever read.
Yeah, yeah. Did you want the story, by the way?
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Because I've not got any.
We do want.
So
story.
you know how post rock bands, you think they're going to be all very studious and like introspective and
yeah.
Yeah.
So I was wandering down, because Damnation Festival's in Leeds Uni Student Union. Yeah. And I was wandering down a corridor on my way to one of the stages, and I saw that they'd just arrived, and I was like, oh my god, I fucking saw you 2 days ago in Birmingham. Can I interview you later? That would be fucking awesome. And they were like, yeah, okay. That'd be cool. No problem. Come find us after we play. So I watched them. They played a fucking stormer. I went into the merch area and found Jeremy. And I was like, oh, can we do this intro or interview thing? Like, when do you want to do it? And he rocked a little bit. And he's like, we're going to have to do it right now. Otherwise, I'm going to make no fucking sense. I was like, okay, all right then, fair enough. So him and Dono came into the dressing room area and we were sat there doing the interview, and it became obvious that they had smoked a fucking huge amount of weed. He had taken some antihistamines and drunk Buckfast, which is tonic wine, i.e., from what I gather, so still
really
yet to try
strong.
It.
Really strong.
Very strong, and has kind of caffeine in it as well, I believe. So
I believe it was made by monks for drunks.
So he's travelling in a lot of very different directions internally at this one point in time. So it was Basically, I think the closest I'm ever going to get to interviewing Motley Crue in their prime. Because him and Dono were fucking ruined and it was amazing. Like, the first half an hour of the interview, literally half an hour, is them talking about cock rings. I hadn't even asked them a question. They were just on it. Then they explained the kind of drugs that, like, they had taken to do the album and stuff like that, which was a question from someone else that was with me at the time. And then...
You obviously like drugs. Which drugs did you take to do the album?
Chris Royal King came over to just pick something up because we were in their area. And, like, Jeremy went, "Hey, Chris, we're fucked up and we're doing an interview." And he just went, "I don't give a fuck what you do." And just stamped off. And it's like, oh, shit. That was some tension. Dono's not in the band anymore, but Chris is, so...
Right.
Did you get much from the interview in the end?
It's a fucking great interview. It's, like, it's good to listen to. It's not really a particularly good representation of the band musically, I would say.
No.
I especially liked the bit where I tried to get them to do some station IDs, and they couldn't do it at all. Like, I had one that just was like, "Hi, I'm Dono from... it was basically like that, just people on the verge of unconsciousness because they're stoned and fucked. One time he tried to, like, do a monk, like, chant while the other guy was trying to record, so he's just like, "Oh," like that. And he's like, "What the fuck are you doing?" And he's like, "I'm trying to help you focus, bro." It was very, very good.
I had a sort of similar experience with a different post-rock band. I wasn't obviously interviewing them.
Yeah.
But I went to Truck Festival in Oxford in, I think it was 2004, and there was a band called Red Jetson, who were fucking ace. But we were, my band, Lando Calrissian, were sort of vaguely in talks with them to support them at some point, and never actually ended up happening.
Yeah.
But we were talking to their drummer just after they'd got off stage. It was getting dark, and there was the area we were standing in was lit by these lights that were really, really slowly changing colour.
Yeah.
And he was standing there, and he just suddenly, he'd noticed that everything had gone green, whereas it was pink a few moments before, and it just completely freaked him out. And he had to go back to their tent because his drugs had kicked in and it was not going to go well.
Yep.
Another... So post-rock bands, apparently, they like the drugs. Some do, obviously.
Mostly the weed, but often, yeah, often the...
The hallucinogenics.
Yeah. Another not quite as intense and good story is when me and my friend Alex went to see them at Firebug.
Right.
They were late to get there because they had some kind of passport issues when getting into Europe.
Yeah.
And Alex is like, "Oh, this is fucking taking ages. I'm going to go for a piss." And they arrived, and Jeremy went in and just went for a piss at the same time as Alex. Alex realised who it was, and he's like, "Oh my God. Oh. And Jeremy's like, "Hey man, how's it going?" Yeah, I was just... And just started rambling at him about all of his passport issues and stuff like that. And Alex is like, "My dick in my hand." Because you know, like... Do you like having conversations while you're pissing?
No.
I don't.
Nobody does.
No.
That's
like,
just
it's
weird.
Easier for girls because they're
girls
in separate
do,
cubicles
but,
and that's a
yeah.
thing. Right? But, like, if I'm...
And we haven't got a cock in our hands.
Exactly. If I've got
often.
My dick in my hand, I don't want to talk to you. Like, yeah. If I'm pissing, I'm not talking.
No.
Basically.
So Alex didn't then ask him if he liked Space Marines.
No, he didn't.
Like he did to the taxi driver in Poland.
No, Alex was a lot more...
sober.
Sober and together at that point in time. A little bit more timid is what I'm going to say. Yes.
I think we probably need to round it up about there, because we need to talk about Tool.
Yes.
Oh, I've got tons more I could say about this will destroy you. But...
Well, of course you have.
We're going to be superlatives. People can guess them.
Yes.
Probably.
Why don't you just put all of the superlatives up in one big, long Twitter post?
Yes.
Because
now you can have more characters than you used to be able to.
There still are
twice
enough.
As many.
Yeah, that's... I really don't like the restrictions. It annoys me. I'm going to talk about Tool.
I'm going to talk about Tool as well.
Ah, but okay. I'm going to introduce them.
Okay, then.
An American rock band, according to Wikipedia. I'd go with prog metal.
But they are.
Tool are, because we're English. Yes. Damn it. Tool are an American rock band from Los Angeles, California. Formed in 1990. The band's lineup includes drummer Danny Carey, guitarist Adam Jones, vocalist Maynard James Keenan, and Justin Chancellor on bass, who replaced original bassist Paul D'Amour, who was the bass player up until 95.
Yes. Did they get rid of him because he's got a silly surname?
I think they got rid of him because the music wasn't quite as good while he was still in the band.
Yeah, that could
I like Opiate and Undertow, but there is a noticeable shift when Justin Chancellor joins.
Yes.
Very true. I like Tool. Tool are good.
Yeah, yeah. I like. I think the stuff that came after Anima was not as good. No, Lateralis. Sorry.
Right.
Anima, Lateralis, and then 1,000 Days is a little bit.
Yes, 10,000 Days.
That's the one. 10,000.
I definitely don't like as much as the others. However, I'm optimistic for this new album.
I do like the fact that the deluxe edition of the album came with built-in 3D glasses. So you
the only edition.
Is that the only edition?
Yeah, there isn't a standard edition. That is the standard edition.
I mean, that's pretty cool. It wasn't cool enough for me to buy it.
So what I'm talking about is that their most recent album at the moment...
Which was how long ago?
13, 14 years.
Yeah.
2006, so 13 years. But their new album is allegedly released on August the 30th this year.
Yes, a couple of weeks ago, I've been talking about this with Lydia, my wife, and we went to dinner at her parents, and her dad was like, oh, honestly, this band's new album, it's taken ages. It's been a couple of years since they released it. And I was just like, ha! And Lydia went, Ian, how long have you been waiting for a new Tool album? I was like 13 years.
Yeah.
A while.
So there was a mini album Opiate in 1992.
Yep.
Their second album Undertow was 93.
Yep.
Enema was 96. Lateralis was 2001. 10,000 Days 2006. And if it gets released when they say it does, the new as yet untitled album comes out in 2019. So they kind of get longer and longer.
Yep.
As you're waiting. They're perfectionists. They want to make sure it's working.
Is that definitely what it is, though?
No. There was a legal case that they were involved in for about 6 or 7 years, which meant that they could rehearse and write.
Yeah.
But they weren't legally allowed to record.
Why?
During that time, it was something like the legal case had to be... They had to keep it on hold.
All right.
In a similar way... I could be completely wrong on this, could be misunderstanding it, but my understanding is that it might be... You know when Kesha had that thing where she was not allowed to record?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
While the legal case was going on.
Yeah.
Although Tool's thing was... It was to do with a piece of artwork that they... Somebody was alleging that they'd used without permission, and they were saying that they had been given permission at the time to use it. Don't know the full details, but they So they were sued, and then they countersued, and it just got really, really, really complicated. They've all got other projects that they work on in the meantime. Maynard is in a Perfect Circle as well.
He's involved in Pucifer as well.
Pucifer, which is his sort of comedy rock.
Yeah.
For a band that seem incredibly serious, Maynard actually started out as a stand-up comedian.
Did he?
Yes, before the band formed. That's what he thought he was. He joined the army for a bit, left the army, and was aiming to be a stand-up comedian.
Bloody hell.
Then met the other guys and formed the band.
He's got a very weird sense of humour.
He has.
He's very much into the theatrical performance, though.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yes.
Except, at the same time, he doesn't actually like being a performer. He doesn't. He kind of, like, sticks to the shadows.
He does with Tool.
Or is it different with A Perfect Circle?
He's very much the front man in A Perfect Circle.
He's still sort of...
Because I've listened to some of their stuff, but I haven't watched any videos of them. I've only watched videos of them
still,
with Tool.
He's still sort of towards the back of the stage with Tool, but with A Perfect Circle, but he's got spotlights on him, which he often doesn't have with Tool.
Which is strange, given that he has elaborate costumes, body paint, wigs.
But he does that as other things to hide himself.
Yeah.
He wants the music to do the talking, so tries to hide himself so he's not focused on as a frontman.
And
strongly believes that the vocals are no more important than the bass, drums and guitar. Whereas a lot of bands, the front person is the singer.
It's weird though, because while I was doing my research, I've really focused on Maynard, actually.
He tends to be the one that does most of the interviews still. But I don't know if that's... I think that's just because the others can't really be bothered, but also probably don't get asked for them as much.
I found this brilliant fact, actually, tying it back into one of our old episodes, about Courtney Love. Courtney Love once referred to Keenan as a media whore. And he responded, "Isn't that great? I have the distinction of being called a media whore by Courtney Love." He said it is after watching. He called her. This was in reference to Frances Bean, and he said he called Courtney the tornado that is her mother. Right. Oh God, how is Frances Bean going to survive this insanity? And he created these giveaway T-shirts saying "Free Frances Bean." It started as a bit of a joke.
I do remember those T-shirts.
But demand got really, really big for
him. He's got a legitimate point, though. There's no way you could be Courtney Love's child and not be a little bit fucked up.
Yeah.
I just thought
it was funny. He's very, very outspoken.
This is another one for me.
He doesn't care who he pisses off, which happens a lot.
This band for me is another one like Porcupine Tree, in that I like his vocals more than the band as a whole. The music's a bit proggy for me, but God, I love his voice.
I think you would like A Perfect Circle more then.
I don't know, I listened to a few of them and I didn't. Maybe I listened to the wrong song.
Though,
We'll do a separate episode on them another time. But
well, we should maybe.
I'll do you a playlist.
But I mean, they're a bit, when they're not quite so proggy, they're kind of quite 90s grunge, quite Pearl Jam.
First two records, Opiate and Undertow, I wouldn't describe them as prog. I would describe them as alt-rock.
Yeah. They're
not a million miles away from... it's more Soundgarden-y than prog.
Yeah, that too. But, I mean, his voice has got this kind of twisted, strangled vibrato to it, which I really liked. But he also reminds me of Craig Wedren, who was the singer of Shudder to Think. And it's really weird because in the interlude between recording this podcast and recording our 1999 special...
When we were having our lunch...
Ian put on an album by
Tweaker,
which also featured a song with Craig Wedren on, and so two references to him in one day from a band that
synchronicity. Oh no, that was The Police.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realise anyone had even heard of Shudder to Think.
I've heard of them. I've got a couple of their tracks.
I've heard of them. I don't have any of their tracks.
Yeah. I like them a lot, but his voice really reminds me of him. And
there's a track on the Velvet Goldmine soundtrack called Hot Ones, which is fucking brilliant.
I don't know
but
that.
I only know a couple of tracks.
He is I've watched a couple of... One of the things I've weirdly got into recently is watching YouTube videos of vocal coaches watching singers.
Yes. Yeah. Have you seen, there's a girl called Beth Rawes?
Yes.
She's done absolutely loads of Maynard ones.
Yeah, because he's, like, his body positioning on stage when he sings and stuff like that is terrible.
Yeah.
And so he shouldn't be getting the best out of his voice, and yet he's still doing that.
Yeah.
Like, so he's a fucking phenomenal singer. He can hold notes for
ages. One of the technically amazing ones that he does is a track called Ticks and Leeches on Lateralists, where there's a sort of scream bit which is ridiculously long.
Yeah.
It's like around about a minute long that he screams for.
Yeah.
And he did that in the studio and completely blew his voice out.
Yeah.
So they've only done it live a few times since, and they use, I think they use a bit of electronics to sort of help him with it, and, you know, shitloads of reverb on it, and that kind of thing. But the one time he did do it, he nailed it absolutely perfectly, luckily, because he wouldn't have done it again, and couldn't do. But yeah, technically amazing, but it doesn't matter about technically amazing, it sounds really fucking good. But mixed with the whole fucking band, they're fantastic. I mean, Danny Carey is one of the fucking greatest drummers in the world.
Yeah, no, Carey is
technically
phenomenal.
Amazing. You know, he's got he has a drum kit that the shells for the kit are made out of brass from melted down cymbals.
Oh wow!
So he, whenever he broke a cymbal,
he
saved it and then got them all melted down. I think he may have had other people's added in there as well, because it's going to be a lot of fucking cymbals to make this kit, and it's so heavy that they can't use it outside of America because they can't ship it anywhere. So they can take it by road, but you can't take it in a plane or a boat because it's just so ridiculously fucking heavy. But it looks cool.
Lyrically, they're quite intense, aren't they?
Oh, very.
It's sort of overwhelming. I mean, the Crawl Away album, it's just...
Crawl Away?
Album?
Oh, that, sorry, is that one of the songs?
Yeah.
Oh, it's off Undertow. Sorry, my... The bits in bold in my notes are wrong.
Well done.
The lyrics on the whole album are very overwhelming, though. Sort of just drenched
you can hear
in this
them
overbearing emotion.
You can hear them better on that album as well.
Yeah.
Which probably helps that.
Yeah.
Although there is a bit on there about the cries of the carrots. That confused me.
Disgustipated.
Yeah. And what's that a portmanteau of? Disgusted and what? Anticipated? Dissipated?
I don't really
constipated?
Know.
Could be anything.
Could be either. one of the tracks that you're talking about, I'm assuming there, is Prison Sex. Because that's got some pretty fucking intense lyrics, basically, about...
It does, actually.
There's a bit of... I believe he was... I think there was some child abuse involved when he was a kid.
Well, no, he said not, actually.
Right, there's rumours about it.
There are lots of rumours about it.
They do not like elaborating on lyrics.
They do not. He's very private. It's a metaphor only, but...
They don't even print the lyrics in... any of the albums.
I watched a clip on YouTube from a gig in '96 where he introduces Prison Sex.
Okay.
And I guess this only further fuels the rumours, but he said it's about recognising, identifying cycles of abuse within yourself.
Yeah.
The first step of the process, realisation, identifying. The next step is to work through it. But this song is the first step. And he said, but it's not literal. It's absolutely not literal.
Right.
But
there's a lot of similar sort of themes that come up in the lyrics.
Yeah, yeah.
On later albums. There's also there's a lyric on while we're talking about the lyrics, there's a lyric on, I think it's on H, which is in Enema.
Yeah.
Where he says something about turn my piss into wine. Which is slightly worrying, as he's now got a wine company.
He does, doesn't he?
Don't drink it, guys. he's hinted what he's done there.
Also, it's not vegan friendly anymore.
No, because...
Did you see that picture?
Didn't he put, like, some bacon in it or something?
Oh, it's he was accusing it.
Right.
Yeah, it's a picture of him going, I heard my wine was vegan friendly. Let's fix that. It's just a picture of him holding bacon above it. So yeah, he does not. He doesn't really give a fuck about upsetting
he's
people.
He's a bit of a troll, isn't he?
A little bit.
There's just a cool geeky Easter egg kind of thing on Enema in Useful Idiot. The end of the track, it's got a sound of a needle skipping.
Yeah.
Which grows louder as the track progresses, and so you think your record's fucked up. But on vinyl, it actually, the song ends in a locked groove as well.
It does, but anybody that's fucking got the vinyl of that is lucky as hell, because it was Enema was originally released on vinyl, but not very many copies. I think it came out a week before the CD.
Yeah.
And then they didn't press up many copies. This was 96. Yeah. So nobody was buying vinyl then. And even bootleg copies of it go for ridiculous amounts of money.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that at some point they'll reissue it.
Yeah.
I've got Opiate and Lateralus on vinyl, but I don't have any of the others. 10,000 Days has never been released on vinyl. Undertow you can't.
Because the 3D goggles wouldn't fit your face.
This is true. So this is what I was starting to say earlier. So the artwork for 10,000 Days, it's in like a big thick cardboard book kind of thing with a foldy over bit that's got lenses in it, and then the book has got stereoscopic images, so you look through these lenses and it's all 3D inside, which is pretty cool. Lateralus,
That's a like a cutaway of a human body, isn't it?
Yeah, Lateralus is the booklet for the CD is printed on plastic, see-through plastic with a cutaway. So you've got you open it up and there's the veins, then the muscles, then the bones and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is the vinyl version of it. That's it's a double picture disc, so it's got those on the actual record itself. They do some cool stuff with the artwork. The Enema had got a load of fake albums inside, which was like other albums by Tool.
Awesome.
And it got things like Dolphins, The Other White Meat, and stuff like that, and 12 Holiday Favourites and stuff like that, which obviously weren't real.
Yes.
Because they do like to fucking troll their fans and take the piss. I got into Tool late 90s.
Yeah.
Me and Ian used to go to a pub called The Jailhouse.
Yes.
Saturday night, Stinkfist, which is the first track on Enema, always used to get played. And it was my absolute favourite song of the night, usually. And I used to mosh to it like a complete bellend every week. To the extent that on one occasion, I was standing on one of the tables, and there's a bit towards the end of the song where there's kind of like a breakdown bit, and it builds up and then just suddenly kicks back in. And I used to time it so I'd jump and land on the floor just as it kicked back in, exactly on the beat. And one week I did that from one of the tables and put my foot through the wooden floor.
Awesome.
And I was skinny then. I could understand it if it happened now.
Yep.
But yeah, so around about that time I was a massive fan, so there was loads of anticipation for Lateralus when it came out. So I was checking, early days of me going on the internet, there were two websites that I'd check every week or every day. The Meathead Perspective, which was a Nine Inch Nails comedy website,
which was amazing,
and toolshed.down.net, which was a semi-official Tool website.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it was run by a guy that was friends with them, and he used to post newsletters about what they were doing, and it always had like all of the sort of scoops on what was happening.
Yeah,
came from there first. And just before Lateralus was released, they announced that they'd got this new album, that it was ready and it was coming out soon, and it was called Systema Encephal.
Right.
And they gave a list of the track list with all the titles, and it was fake. This wasn't what the album was called. The tracks weren't what it was. And within hours, there were hundreds of copies of it on Napster.
Amazing.
Because people had just uploaded different albums and claimed that that was it. And a lot of them were like a record by ISIS, I think it was Panopticon by Isis. Oh,
right.
So there were loads of people that thought that was the new Tool record.
Fucking idiots. Vocals would have been a bit different.
Yes, yeah, it sounded absolutely nothing like it, but it was sort of post-metal. You could see them heading towards that direction, maybe, but the vocal, yeah, it was a different vocalist, clearly. I can remember sort of the anticipation before that album came out, though. The first time that they played Schism, which was Radio 1 Rock Show, had got an exclusive.
Yeah.
So I can remember staying up, and they were like, yeah, we're going to play it in a bit, and I fell asleep. Because Radio 1 Rock Show used to start at midnight, and it was, yeah, on until like 2. And they were playing it in the second half of the show. I got my radio on, and I fell asleep, so I was lying in bed. And I can remember waking up just as the first notes of the song were played, so I woke up just in time and heard it.
Ah,
it was fucking great.
Do you know the guy, Rick Beato?
Yes. Yeah, so, I watched some of his YouTube
videos. Yeah, so he did a YouTube video on Schism.
He sort of breaks it down.
20 minutes of detail just about Schism.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what he loves about it most was the bass riff, actually. But then
that's what the whole thing's based around.
It's completely based around that. But there's also 47 time signature changes in it.
Yeah.
So it's his legendary licks.
Prog.
I know. It starts. The main verse goes between a 5/8 and a 7/8, and then later it alternates between a 6/8 and a 7/8.
But you just play it by feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I wouldn't have said that was like if you compared that to the amount of time signature changes in 43% Burns.
Yeah.
While he's doing his breakdown, though, the hilarious point is he's trying to write out a couple of the bars in full.
Yeah.
To explain what he means about the change in between the time signatures, and then he goes, and we'll write this in 13/8 so it's easier to follow.
Excellent. With going by the bass part in that lead in the song, and going back to what I said right at the start about the sound changing, I think that Justin Chancellor joining was sort of the biggest catalyst in Tool sound evolving to where it went.
Yeah, his bass playing is very noticeable.
Absolutely. And
characterful.
So he's English. He was originally in a band called Peach, who had supported Tool on tour.
Yeah.
So when Paul D'Amore left, they called him up and asked if he wanted to audition. I've got the Peach. They only did one record.
Yeah.
And it's really good. There's a track on there called You Lied, which Tool covered on... there's a box set called Salival,
yeah,
which is... There's a video of all their videos up to that point, and then a CD of... it's like sort of live tracks and outtakes.
Yeah.
And this is one of the live tracks on there. But you can tell from listening to that album that Peach sounds closer, I think, to Anima onwards than Undertow does. So I think him joining, even though there are quite a few of the tracks on there on Anima that Paul D'Amore has a writing credit on, I think he, Justin Chancellor, he helped evolve the band's sound, because it's... I mean, it was always quite
basic. It could have been what they were pushing towards anyway, and then they were like, well, let's just get Justin, because
he's doing that kind of
thing. This is what we're...
Yeah,
aiming at.
But there's not much overdubs, as far as I can tell.
Yeah,
it's all one guitar, one bass, drums. Sometimes there's some synths and samples in the background, and then the vocals. And it's got such a massive sound from Justin's bass,
yeah,
and Adam Jones's guitar. It's a little bit like Pantera, where when Adam goes for a solo, there's no rhythm in the background at all. You can hear it really well on Parabola or Parabola.
Yeah.
Depending on how you pronounce the fucking
word. You know, the title track of Anima, however we're pronouncing it.
Enema.
Anima.
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 Okay.
I actually liked the guitar solo.
Fucking hell.
I know.
Tracy likes a guitar solo.
I really, really liked it.
Earth-shattering news.
Because that one was on the podcast playlist. And at the point I heard that, I was just like, fuck, I really, really like that song, and went off to listen to the whole album.
It's great. I love that record. So that song is... the lyrics in that song are about wanting Los Angeles to fall into the sea.
Yeah.
Which is so based...
It's an Atlantis kind of...
Well, it's based on some Bill Hicks stand-up.
Yes.
Arizona Bay. Which Bill Hicks was a really good friend of theirs.
And it's based on the One Good Drug Story stand-up.
No, it's not. It's based on Arizona Bay. I was a massive Bill Hicks fan at the same time as I was a massive Tool
okay,
fan.
There's lines from One Good Drug Story and The War on Drugs.
That is not
sampled,
in...
Sampled, isn't it?
No, that's in Third Eye later on the album. Okay. One Day a Young Man on Acid.
I'll shut up.
Yeah. It's like a news report about a young man on
okay,
acid.
Okay, sorry, carry on.
There aren't samples of Bill Hicks on that song, it's just based on
okay.
his ideas.
Carry on.
But yeah, that's where I am now.
Sorry.
Los Angeles falling into the sea.
Yeah. It's a fucking brilliant song. And weirdly, when I was going on holiday to Los Angeles once, which I only did once, we were in the airport walking down, and this baggage truck went past, and it got this weird, I think it was a noise to let people know it was there.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like an intermittent hiss sound, which sounded exactly like the breathing at the start of the song.
Well, that's weird.
Which is weird. And it was like, and I was expecting a guitar to go it didn't. So, but I'd got it stuck in my head then. It was cool. There's a lot of... They like interludes. Weird interludes. Mm. Particularly on Enema, whatever the fuck it's pronounced. As it is now called. That's the full title. There was a guy... when I was at college years ago, which was the main time I was really, really into it, there was a guy we knew that was a bit of a bell end. Who really, he was asking us, I want to download a Tool song, which one should I download to get into Tool? So we told him to download Minus Irons, because it's one of the interludes on there, but it's like about 3 minutes 59 seconds long.
Oh,
so when you looked at the thing before you downloaded it, it looked like it was going to be a normal song, and then it's 3 minutes 59 seconds of static and electrical noises.
Nice.
That was Matt the Hat.
Oh, well, of course.
Ian knows him.
He is almost certainly in prison now.
I hope so.
not many people I'd say that about, but like... No. Yeah.
Very, very strange, dodgy man.
Yes, he was.
Anyway.
One of the other things I watched on YouTube while I was researching this was a YouTube video called...
The Best of the Wedding Present.
No.
Called Probably.
How Tool Used Maths to Create Lateralis.
Oh, yes.
So the whole of the album, but in particular the
title track
is based on the Fibonacci sequence, which is where the number in the sequence is the sum of the two previous numbers. And also the lyrics use an iambic pentameter, where you've got a short unstressed syllable followed by a long stressed one. And there's this YouTube video which went into great detail.
Because Tool fans do like to go into great detail and analyse things.
They like analysing things, definitely.
So the Fibonacci sequence would go 1, 1, 2. 5, 13, 21, 34, 55, 89, 144.
I have that memorised.
No,
I haven't just looked it up on an iPad.
Okay, and they don't actually go up that far, because the lyrics actually go up to 8 and then start going back down the sequence. So it's black, then white are all I see in my infancy. Red and yellow then came to be. Then we start going back down the sequence, reaching out to me, let me see.
but then it goes back up higher the next time round.
It does, yeah. 13. But then we've got loads of other little stats. So the introduction of the section of the song is 1 minute 12 long, 0112, which is the first four numbers in the sequence. The first verse starts at 97 seconds, which is approximately 1.618 minutes. 1.618 is the golden ratio. The golden ratio is when you take the numbers of the Fibonacci sequence, if you map them out into a spiral.
Map them out in squares,
into grids.
In the middle in a grid, it makes a spiral.
And you can draw an arc by connecting opposite corners of the tiles,
yeah.
And that forms the Fibonacci spiral.
The spiral appears in nature all over the place, apparently.
Yeah. All over the place, in nature,
and
in art.
Art,
design, classical paintings, galaxies.
Vinci was mad for it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Vitruvian Man and all.
Yeah.
I mean, I love this kind of stuff, actually, going further on this and going into fractals, like the Mandelbrot set and so on, which I've been fascinated with for years anyway.
So you should really like Tool, then.
I should. And yet. I do, and I do. I love his voice, I love some of the intricacies, but I don't think it's a band I choose to listen to often.
Yes.
But I have enjoyed everything I've listened to. And I did go and listen to every album.
Good.
You know, I didn't shirk my listening on this at all.
But what I love about it is, at the same time where they've put all this in for people to ridiculously analyse and look into, you've then got the chorus of the song where the lyrics go, "Overthinking, overanalyzing separates the body from the mind." As in, don't overanalyze it. But yeah.
Brilliant.
Because fucking piss at the
same
time.
Well, the song was originally called 987.
Which is the time signature.
The time signature, 988878. But 987 is also the 17th number in the Fibonacci sequence. But yeah, there's a double standard that he wants you to embrace the random. But the thing is, embracing it could be interpreted as studying the anomalies and not...
Yeah?
And not trying to not overanalyze it. I don't know, it was absolutely fascinating. I went down a huge rabbit hole with
but
it.
But this is what... Tool are fucking hilarious for this, because they put all of this stuff in there. You've got things like... Danny Carey's really interested in, like, occult symbols, and he... sets up his drums in, like, exact diagrams of, you know, occult symbols. And he's into, like, Aleister Crowley magic and that kind of strangeness.
Mm.
And in the old toolshed.downnet newsletters,
yeah,
they're really into conspiracy theories and that kind of thing as well.
Right.
Because you've got the guy that ran the site, and I think it was usually Danny.
Yeah.
The drummer used to regularly go out and try and sneak into Area 51 and then just write reports of how far they'd gotten. Normally it was, we drove down this road, we got stopped by men with guns, we fucking ran. but there were like times where they did manage to allegedly get over the barrier, and they put photos on the website and stuff like that. I used to read this all the time and be sort of obsessively like reading it. But then, so the ridiculous overanalyzing stuff, on 10,000 Days, there is a hidden secret track. So the title track, 10,000 Days, is 11 minutes and 13 seconds long.
Yeah.
There's two other tracks on there, Virginity Tray and Wings for Marie. Which Virginity Tray is...
It's about his mother, that one, isn't it?
Yeah. 10,000 Days, the whole thing is. I'll get into that in a second.
Okay.
Virginity Tray is 5 minutes and 2 seconds long. Wings for Marie is 6 minutes and 11 seconds long. So the two of those add up to 11 minutes and 13 seconds.
Yes.
So people noticed... I don't know how people work this out. I think it's because Tool fans would sit there and overanalyze everything.
No shit.
But they worked out that these two tracks fit perfectly to be played at the same time as 10,000 Days. So obviously you'd need two copies of the CD, or you'd need to put it into a computer. And
which I did.
Yeah, I've done it as well. And it fits perfectly.
Yeah.
You've got bits in there where the lyrics from one song go into... the lyrics from the other song that's been played at the same time. So they make sense on their own.
God, how beautiful.
But then when put together, they have a complete different thing. So you said about his mum. Maynard's mum, it was Judith Marie Keenan. She had, when he was a kid, she had a really debilitating stroke, which left her basically paralysed. She then was still alive for about 30 years, which is what 10,000 days is. It's however long 10,000 days is, before dying. And the whole time, she believed that her belief in God was what was keeping her alive. He believed that basically if there was a real God, he wouldn't fucking do that to people.
How is that what Judith by a Perfect Circle is about?
That's what Judith by a Perfect Circle is about, which has the line, fuck your God. So yeah, that's one of the other things that sort of has massively shaped his lyric writing, that kind of thing.
There were more layers even than the Fibonacci sequence in Lateralis.
More layers than a prog onion.
There was a progression of colours in that first verse, black, then white, then red and yellow. And that is saying it's reflecting the birth of the universe or an individual or a thought. But apparently he pulled them colours from Aboriginal creation stories, which play a heavy role throughout the album. And the colours are also used in medieval alchemy.
They fucking love alchemy.
The process for creating the Philosopher's Stone used four colour changes.
Right.
So there's just, so many layers of what lyrically built that album.
Later on, Voldemort got a hold of it.
Well, exactly.
And actually, Maynard, with his bald head, looks a bit like Voldemort.
He does.
Shit. Right, quick edit, because since recording this episode, a lot more has happened in the world of Tool. The album is out, as we mentioned, on the 30th of August. The episode comes out, so if you listen to this straight away when it comes out, we're less than a week before that. I'm recording this about 2 weeks before that, just about a week or so before our episode goes out. The album's called Fear Inoculum. The download gig, which I went to, was great. They played two new tracks on there, the same two that have been played at the previous shows. So that was Descending and another one that I can't remember the name of right now. So they've released the track Fear Inoculum, which is the title track, on Spotify and Apple Music and YouTube and all that. It's pretty good. It's nothing spectacular so far, but it may be one that sort of grows on me, I think. But the album, it's apparently in a special limited edition physical package, which includes a CD in a tri-fold soft pack video brochure featuring a 4-inch HD rechargeable screen with exclusive video footage, a USB charging cable, a 2-watt speaker, and a 30-page insert book. But it's 80 fucking quid. So because it's 80 fucking quid, I'm probably not going to buy that on CD. I'm going to wait for the vinyl to come out and hope that it's not, you know, comparable. You know, if the vinyl's like 150 quid, I probably won't get it. But looking forward to it coming out. For you guys listening now, just over a week till it's out, and they're all on Spotify now. Originally, we were thinking that we wouldn't be able to put any of the Tool songs on the Spotify playlist, but while in the process of mixing and editing this episode, Tool released all of their music on Spotify, so it's all be on the playlist for you. Brilliant. All right, and with the rest of the episode. Bye. Another bit with where they like sort of fucking with people, another one of the interludes on Enema, there's a track called the Eier von Satan,
the eggs of the
eggs
devil.
The eggs of the devil, which it's a sort of
it's a bit Metal Machine music.
It's a guy chanting in German over like an industrial clanking metal soundtrack, which, if you actually translate the lyrics, he's sort of chanting, and there's like cheering, and it sounds like a fucking Nazi rally. And it's actually a recipe for hash cookies.
Is it?
With no eggs, which is why she keeps shouting, "Und keine Eier," which is "and no eggs."
And no eggs.
Yeah. And There was also, there's another interlude on that album called Message from Harry Manback, which was Maynard's old roommate, who was, no, it was a friend of his old roommate, who had stayed at their house, stolen loads of their food and stuff, and then disappeared, and they kicked him out. Who phoned back and left a voicemail message on their answer machine saying how he's going to kill them all, they're all going to get cancer, in a like sort of Italian accent, because the guy was Italian.
Yeah.
And this allegedly is a real voicemail from the guy. I've always suspected it might be a little bit like that Godspeed one that we were talking about, where they've just made it up themselves.
But then again, it might have been just a re-recording of what the dude actually said.
Or could be.
Who knows?
Could be. But yeah, new album soon, hopefully. They've
played two new tracks live, haven't
played two new tracks at a festival.
I listened to the one and it was alright. I'm not really...
I'm hoping it's going to be good. I was never as keen on 10,000 Days, like we said, as the previous two. Lateralis is my favourite. Enema is also fantastic. But I'm hoping the new one is worth the wait. But it might not be, but hopefully it is.
Let's remain optimistic.
Yes.
We're recording this before the last episode of Game of Thrones, so we haven't had our entire lives ruined at this point.
But we may do in a few hours' time.
Yep.
We may do.
So I think we probably need to wrap that one up about there.
Yeah.
So next episode, we're not doing the letter U.
Or V.
Or the letter V, because fuck those letters. Those letters are
but
cunts.
I wanted to talk about Vader.
That's fine, we can do that in another episode later on.
We could do,
when we've killed
we could do
the
U
alphabet.
And V, and then tag S on, and we could do Ultra Vivid soon.
That would just be you, wouldn't it?
Perhaps.
And also just you.
I believe you've
really
actually,
just
I believe
me.
You've got them on the
we
list.
Can do
for
UFO
a
as well then. UFO would be the, amazing. We could talk about Doctor Doctor.
But the issue is there aren't enough big bands for us to do full episodes for those.
No.
So. When after the next run through what's left of the alphabet,
be careful with those hand gestures, Colin.
Yes.
That nobody can see.
Yes.
After the next run through the alphabet, we are going to kill the alphabet and we're just going to go freeform, and it's nobody's going to know what letter's coming next. It's going to be all over the place. It's going to be like jazz podcasting. So I believe Ultra Vivid Scene and Vader.
Not
we
like
can do
that. Don't worry. I also don't want to do Vader. I think I've heard one Vader song ever.
But
I'm
Ultra
just
Vivid,
being a prick.
Ultra Vivid Scene are definitely on Tracy's
definitely
list.
Do that.
I remember that. So the indie purists can go.
Oh yeah, great.
Right. So next time it's actually W episode.
Woo are we talking about?
Woo are we talking about indeed? We're talking about the Wooding present.
And the Wedtang clan?
Yeah, that'll do. We've been Wooding Music. Thanks for listening. Bye!
Bye.